Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I am speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source, grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and pen so you can take notes during the show. First, let's look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. From Bloomberg News by Linda Sandler and Andrew M. Harris, bankruptcy filings may hit 1.4 million this year. Personal bankruptcies show no sign of abating after rising more than a third this year and may hit 1.4 million by December 31st as jobs are lost and loans are harder to get, according to the American Bankruptcy Institute. More than 126,000 consumers filed for bankruptcy in the U.S. last month, 34% more than in July 2008, the ABI said in this latest report. The increase came after a 36.5% rise in personal bankruptcies in the first 6 months to 675,351, according to the ABA Research Group, which interprets data collected by the National Bankruptcy Research Center. Rising unemployment on top of high pre-existing debt burdens is a formula for higher bankruptcies through the end of this year, ABI Executive Director Samuel Giordano said in a statement. Debt problems don't stop with subprime borrowers. Celebrities who filed for bankruptcy in July included movie actor Stephen Baldwin, who sought protection from creditors after lenders began foreclosure procedures against his home. Lenny Dykstra filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in a petition that says that the former Major League Baseball All-Star owes between $10 million and $50 million. Steeply rising filings by consumers are hurting banks. J.P. Morgan Chase predicted more losses on consumer loans last month, even as it announced a rise in second quarter profit on record investment banking fees. CEO Jamie Dimon said he doesn't expect the credit card business to make a profit this year or in 2010. J.P. Morgan said losses in its Chase credit card portfolio may be 10% next quarter and will be highly dependent on unemployment after that. Losses for cards issued by Washington Mutual, which the bank acquired in September, may reach 24% by year's end, the company said. J.P. Morgan's credit cards lost $672 million compared with income of $250 million in the second quarter last year. Home equity charge-offs climbed to $1.3 billion, or 4.6%. Prime mortgage defaults rose to $481 million, or 3.1%, from $104 million, or 1.1%, a year earlier. Dimon said the company supported proper consumer protection and that pending legislation setting up an agency to monitor consumer lending practices would hurt short-term profits in the credit cards. Congress, in October 2005, enacted the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act, a legislative reform package intended to make it harder for consumers to get court orders wiping out their uncollateralized debt. The act required debt counseling and a means test for would-be filers. Moving ahead, in the USA Today by Kathy Chu, in an article entitled Credit Card Issuers Pile on New Fees, a growing number of credit card issuers are starting to tack on fees for inactivity or purchases made outside the United States. For months, issuers have raised credit card rates and fees at a dizzying pace. Now, a growing number are starting to tack on new card fees for inactivity or purchases made outside the United States. In June, Fifth Third Bank began charging a $19 fee if credit card borrowers have no account activity in 12 months. Discover now levies a 2% fee on purchases made outside the United States, and Chase has introduced a $30 annual fee on its popular Freedom credit card for certain cardholders. Citigroup, meanwhile, has rolled out a policy where certain credit card borrowers who pay late are subject to a reinstatement fee to be able to redeem accumulated points for rewards. This fee is currently no dollars. But it won't stay that way, predicts Robert Hammer, who consults with the industry, if Citigroup finds cardholders aren't objecting to the policy. Citigroup spokesman Samuel Wang says, "We currently have no plans to raise it." The fees represent issuers' last and latest attempt to mitigate the effects of a credit card law passed in May, which restricts rate increases and marketing to college students. Analysts say that because most provisions don't take effect until February 2010, issuers are finding ways now to bolster their income despite consumers' precarious financial situations. Issuers are hoping to slip in fees where they're least likely to be noticed, says Adam Jusko, founder of IndexCreditCards.com, a card comparison site. One fee making a comeback is the annual fee. In this economy, issuers are sending fewer credit card offers to U.S. households, yet a higher proportion of the offers have fees, according to Sinovate, which tracks direct mail. Issuers justify the new fees as a way to respond to the tough economy or keep their prices on par with their competitors. Chase also points out that Freedom Card borrowers who don't want to pay an annual fee still get a reward program with 1% cash back on purchases. This new program, however, tends to be less generous than the old one, analysts say. The changes in card terms means that consumers need to read their credit card bills and notices extra carefully, says Curtis Arnold of CardRatings.com. Many of the same banks are also extending some of their most profitable and controversial credit card fees to bank accounts. One way they're doing so is making it easier or costlier for consumers to spend more than they have in their checking accounts, just as they allow borrowers to spend past their card limits and charge them a fee. In June, Bank of America raised its monthly fee on certain checking accounts and imposed a fee on accounts that remain overdrawn. Bank of America did, however, lower its fee on overdrafts of $5 or less. Citigroup, meanwhile, has raised foreign transaction fees on debit cards. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. I'd like to continue with an article by Sandra Block from USA Today regarding settling credit card debt and the associated scams. You snicker when you hear an ad for a pill that will vaporize belly fat. You scoff at suggestions that you can work at home and earn more money than Warren Buffett. But when you hear about a program that promises to significantly reduce your credit card debt, you wonder, do these debt relief services really work? Debt settlement companies typically try to negotiate with credit card companies to reduce the amount you owe. Rising unemployment has led to a sharp increase in the number of consumers who are behind on their payments, creating a receptive audience for their services. But like a weight loss product that causes you to gain 10 pounds, some of these programs could leave you even deeper in debt. Federal and state regulators have brought a number of actions against debt relief companies for misleading and deceptive practices. Last week, Chase Card Services, a division of J.P. Morgan Chase, said it will forgive the debts of more than 13,000 credit card holders who were allegedly defrauded by a Florida-based group of debt settlement companies. The settlement stemmed from a lawsuit brought by Florida Attorney General Bill McCollum against the companies. The lawsuit alleged that customers were told to stop sending monthly payments to their credit card companies and send the money instead to the debt settlement firm, which promised to reduce debts to pennies on the dollar. Instead of sending the money to credit card companies, the lawsuit alleged, the group used it to pay attorneys and processing fees. For some borrowers with large debts that can't be repaid within 3 to 5 years, a reputable debt settlement company may offer an alternative to bankruptcy, says Jerry Detweiler, credit advisor for Credit.com, a consumer site. Legislation enacted in 2005 has made it more difficult for some individuals to file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, which eliminates most debts. Chapter 13 bankruptcy requires you to agree to make up to 5 years of court-ordered payments, and you may be required to surrender some assets. According to Detweiler, however, still bankruptcy offers more legal protection than debt settlement. While you're filing for bankruptcy, your creditors can't file lawsuits or harass you. He said, I would never suggest someone to go into debt settlement unless they've met with an attorney, and the attorney concurs that bankruptcy may not be the best option. If you do decide to pursue debt settlement, watch out for red flags. You should take some notes here, because there are some warning signs. One, the company charges a large upfront fee. Many of the debt relief companies targeted by federal and state regulators demanded thousands of dollars in fees and never delivered on promises. If a company gets most of its payment upfront, they, of course, don't have much incentive to do a good job for you. Ideally, fees should be tied to results. Point number two, the company claims that debt settlement won't affect your credit report. This is not true. While successful debt settlement will reduce the amount you owe, your credit will be significantly damaged. If you're weighing bankruptcy versus debt settlement from a credit report standpoint, at minimum, there is no difference. But when you look into the bankruptcy fresh start reality, creditors tend to favor people who have no large amounts of unsecured debt hanging over their heads and also cannot file bankruptcy for years. So from a practical point of view, the person who files bankruptcy will get a higher credit rating much more quickly. So the debt settlement will affect your credit report in a harmful way. The third point is that the debt settlement company claims it can protect you from lawsuits. While creditors do settle debts every day, it is an adversarial process, and you could certainly be sued. As I mentioned many times before, any one of your creditors, particularly those who decide not to get on board, which are becoming more and more voluminous, can and do sue people. And of course, as I mentioned in the past, a debtor owes the money, and without giving new consideration under the law, even when that debt is so-called settled, it is leaving behind an amount of money that that company still is owed, which they often sell to debt collectors who will try to collect that debt down the road under a new name and a new aging and accounting system, something we call zombie debt. And also in relationship to this third point, a considerable issue which we have discussed before is that even if you're not sued, the company should be telling you, that is, your debt settlement company should be telling you that you may receive a debt forgiveness 1099 from the creditor, which also goes to the IRS, and you will have to pay income taxes on the amount of debt that was forgiven in the next year. In other words, that money is considered to be income to you. So there are some very important points that you need to discover before you do a debt settlement, and the company should be telling you about those points. Now, the fourth point is that you get involved with a company that claims it can eliminate all of your debts. These companies provide, for a fee of course, a document that purports to absolve the consumer from credit card debts because the original line of credit was illegal. Now, this is an outright scam. Consumers who fall for this end up with higher debts, ruined credit, and calls from a collection agency. The bottom line with all of this is that there are really no low-cost alternatives to debt settlement unless directly with the creditor. In other words, call your lender and see if they're willing to negotiate with you directly rather than using some intervening company that you're paying fees to. There is also another option, which is a nonprofit credit counseling agency, according to Chuck Bell, Programs Director for Consumers Union. A credit counselor may be able to negotiate a debt management plan with your lenders that allows you to repay your debt over time, sometimes at a lower interest rate. Again, you have to be careful. You can find a credit counselor in your area at www.debtadvice.org. That's all one word, debtadvice.org, the website for the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, or www.aiccca.org. Again, aiccca.org, which is the website for the Association of Independent Consumer Credit Counseling Agencies. Ideally, you're getting an independent source of advice, not somebody who is going to profit from your misfortune. And finally, there are many debt relief attorneys, bankruptcy attorneys, who can help you get a solid picture of your financial situation and your possible options during initial free consultations. In sum, protect yourself, be cautious, do not believe everything you see, hear, and read about from companies and the media or advertisements promoting them. Debt settlement has become a hot issue in state attorney general's offices, and many, many scams have been discovered. More people have been seduced into these scams and have spent a lot of money they could not afford to spend in trying to resolve their debt situations. And out of the 1.4 million who will likely file bankruptcy this year, a huge number of those people have tried to do some kind of debt settlement outside of bankruptcy with no tangible success. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. What I've been talking about the last few weeks is if you are in serious financial problems, have a huge amount of debt, and you're not able to meet it, there are things that you do not want to do in your attempts to deal with that debt. And this actually is the list of important considerations, particularly for someone who is in need of a bankruptcy. One of the last things I discussed in the former show was taking out a second mortgage on your house in an attempt to get cash out of the equity in your home to pay your debt, pay your bills, pay your unsecured bills in particular. I emphasize and repeat over and over again that your home is your essential bare necessity, and it is not a savings account. In today's market, with all of the adjustable rate mortgages, options, and the different kinds of contracts that are given to borrowers, diving into the equity to get it to pay off some other debts is a huge risk and will, as we've seen in the markets, expose your house to foreclosure. This is happening everywhere across the country for the very reason that people were dipping into their equity in their homes and using that money by refinancing, second mortgage like that, to try to resolve their debt problems. It is a general maxim that you can't borrow and create debt to get rid of debt. It just doesn't happen. So that is a major do not if you are in serious financial trouble. Another very common thing that people think almost naturally they should do is to transfer their assets somewhere else. They don't necessarily look at it as hiding their assets. They look at it as protecting their assets, but particularly when one is insolvent or near insolvent and one is moving around assets and getting no fair market value for those assets, signing a piece of real estate to a relative, giving a vehicle to your kid, putting all your money in your kids' bank accounts, for example, these kinds of actions will not ultimately protect the asset and could create more problems than a person would ever want. So it is important not to do these kinds of things and, frankly, to discuss your circumstances with an attorney who can give you some legal advice specific to your situation. Now, also remember that credit cards are not savings accounts either. It's not your money. And if you are in serious financial difficulty, using your credit cards is only going to worsen the overall financial situation for you, and it could have some impact if you do need to file bankruptcy on the discharge of the debt for that particular credit card. It is very important not to be taking cash advances or using convenience checks, as I had mentioned in the past, or feeling like you're just going to run up your credit card, max it out, because you're going to have to file bankruptcy anyway. So let me take a vacation or buy some luxury item. These are not wise ideas, and maybe when I say it in the abstract, everyone agrees, but it is a fairly common occurrence for people who are having extreme debt problems. Another thing that people sometimes do is, out of a sort of delusion, write checks just to hold their creditors off against a bank account that doesn't have the money in it. Obviously not a good idea. It can have criminal ramifications to it, so don't do this kind of thing. I've even seen people who have multiple bank accounts with limited overdraft protection and have been writing checks back and forth against those checking accounts that are overdrawn every other month in some delusional attempt to hold off the bank from trying to force that payment in real money. Again, these things catch up with people. If we are in serious financial straits, we don't think that we can manipulate the system to get out of it. Another important thing is that if we have loans with insiders, which could be a family member, a close financial associate, a partner, and these are unsecured loans, there's no collateral backing up the loan, and out of the kindness of our heart, we decide we're going to pay them back and not pay the credit card company or some other unsecured creditor. If that person who is making the payments eventually winds up in bankruptcy, paying insiders is a preference where the court trustee looks back for the entire year prior to filing the bankruptcy and can demand the payee, the insider, to give the money back because they were treated preferentially to other creditors who were treated unfairly. This is a natural tendency of people to favor their friends and relatives or business partners. Yet, if you are in serious financial circumstances, it's not something you should do without consulting an expert. Another thing that people often do when they are in these kinds of financial extremes, they're getting sued either in small claims court or in court for claims over $5,000 usually. They are defendants and they just essentially ignore, do not attend the hearings, do not get any legal advice on the circumstances, go into default. There's judgments against them. Now, people who are in extreme financial circumstances have to have some clarity about how to extract themselves from the problems, and just allowing default judgments against them, which then get converted into garnishment attempts on their wages, on their bank accounts, or if there's certain non-exempt property, the creditor tries to get that property, or there are judgments in counties where a person has their homestead or real estate, a lien is created against that property that has to be dealt with. All of these things should not happen, and then suddenly A person feels I have no other choice other than to file bankruptcy. One needs to think about these things much earlier as they approach the slippery slope and not just go into a denial or avoidance mentality that could wind up with more problems. Another important principle is that you generally don't bank anymore where you owe money. It's wise and prudent to close the account and establish it somewhere else, generally. One has to be careful if they have post-dated checks for payday loans against that account. It may not be wise to close the account, but it is wise to open an account somewhere else and start having your money put in the other account. Also, many banks are not friendly about stopping the payment of automatic withdrawals. As a person is in an insolvent posture, it may be wise that they stop paying unsecured kinds of payments. Of course, you have to speak to your lawyer about this, but if credit card payments are being taken out of your accounts, or even some things that are secured payments are coming out of your accounts, for example, a car that you are going to have to surrender anyway, and the bank will not stop those payments, you don't want that money to be in the account to continue making those payments. So it's important that you take control of that. You get that money in a different account that you have started, and then those automatic withdrawals will naturally fall off. It is important that you regain and maintain control of what little income that you have. So it's important to stop these automatic withdrawals. If you're getting Social Security, it would be a good idea to have an account that is only for the Social Security money. Nothing else goes into it, because an account like that would be exempt, protected, and a creditor cannot take that money. So it's good to not dump your Social Security money in with your other money so it can be traced as only Social Security money. It's a very good point. Also, realize that Social Security being automatically deposited has a lag time of up to a few months to make a change to a different account. So factor that into your entire process here. And of course, while you are waiting for the automatic deposits to change, either from your Social Security deposit or your employer, to your new account, as soon as that money is deposited, you go and withdraw it and place it in the new account. And then finally, if one is in a situation that he or she needs to file bankruptcy, remember that when you go and speak with your attorney, everything needs to be disclosed. All of your debts, including every single credit card that you have, and every personal loan that you've taken, all income that you have, including all sources of the income, all of your expenses that you have, and a number of important other issues, such as transfers that you have been making, usually in the last 2 years. So these and many other issues become really, really vital in filing. Whether it's a Chapter 7 straight liquidation bankruptcy or a Chapter 13, which is a repayment plan. It is just critical that you are honest and complete in your disclosure. And with that, a good attorney can help you get through the extreme debt circumstances that you find yourself in. In sum, even though you are in these unfortunate financial circumstances, there are a lot of things that you can and should do to protect yourself, including, as I have discussed in the last few weeks, a number of things that you should not do. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.